Well, here in the U.S., there was a unanimous decision this week from a Supreme Court that's usually very divided. The court ruled that there are constitutional limits on whether state and local governments can seize cash and property suspected of being involved in crimes. It's called a civil asset forfeiture. Joining us now is Lou Rooley, professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Professor, can you tell us what a civil asset forfeiture is and why it is used?
Civil asset forfeiture is when the government seizes and takes permanently private property on the legal fiction that the property has somehow done wrong. So if it's suspected to be involved with a crime, the government will attempt to permanently take it for itself.
So give me an example of how that would work. The police pull somebody over, find that they've got a bunch of cocaine in the back of their car. Then what happens?
And then if there's any, for example, cash in the car, they will seize all of the cash, and they will also seize the car, and they will bring an action to permanently take that property, then sell the car at auction, and they will keep the cash pursuant to a court order in a civil asset forfeiture case. In fact, in the case that the Supreme Court decided this week, that's pretty much what happened. Mr. Timms from Indiana had bought legally a 2012 Land Rover. It was worth $42,000. And he was involved in a low-level drug offense that involved no more than $400 of street value. And the government seized the Land Rover and kept it for itself.
So how long has this kind of thing been done around the country in cities and states?
Civil asset forfeiture really dates back to the beginning of our history, but was used in smuggling offenses, customs offenses, usually on ships, on the seas, in which there were violations of federal law. But in the 1970s, in the 1980s, in the war on drugs, civil forfeiture was really strengthened to be used for drug offenses, with the theory that if we took away the tools of the trade of big criminal enterprises, we could make headway in the war on drugs. But unfortunately, what has happened is that state and local governments have really pumped up civil asset forfeiture against ordinary citizens for low-level crimes in which they don't even have to be charged with a crime or convicted in order for the government to seize and take property. And this has become a very abusive process pursuant to very harsh laws that has produced great revenues for state and local governments, which in itself has fueled even more abuses.
But just to be clear, what you just said is that you can have your property seized even if you're not found guilty of a crime.
Yes, because the action is brought against the property, not against the person. So they do not have to prove that the person is guilty of the crime.
You're joining us from Philadelphia, where the new district attorney, Larry Krasner, has been trying to reduce civil asset forfeiture. And one thing that you see a lot there is the seizure of homes. What happens there?
Yes, we've had a very aggressive district attorney's office over the last couple of decades here in Philadelphia, and we have studied that and provided representation through our clinic here at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. And over this, for example, over a decade, we saw more than 3,500 cars, over 1,200 houses, and more than $47 million in cash taken for a total of over $68 million seized by the government. Our new district attorney ran on a platform of reforming civil forfeiture and has made great strides in the year that he has taken office in really scaling back civil forfeiture.
So how much do you think that this Supreme Court decision will change things around the country?
Well, I think it's a very important decision because for the first time, our Supreme Court has said that the ban on excessive fines that's found in the Bill of Rights applies to state and local governments. And most citizens will come into contact with civil asset forfeiture at the state and local level. So it's really important that our courts now be more involved in determining whether or not the taking of property is grossly disproportionate. Where, as we had in this case, in the Timms case before the Supreme Court, where you have property that is worth more than four times the maximum fine that could be imposed for this low-level drug offense, that's grossly disproportionate. And I might add that so many individuals give up and don't fight back against civil asset forfeiture because there is no right to counsel. And it often costs more to obtain counsel than maybe the property is worth. And so the government is benefiting from an unjust system that desperately needs reform.
That is Lou Rulli, who's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.